So, how is everybody? How's your retreat going? Does it seem like it's going very quickly? I have this feeling like it was just 2 days ago that we sat here and I asked the same question. This is going very, very quickly. How are people doing? What's happening? What's coming up?
So I've been doing this meditation on dissatisfaction, not really intentionally, I guess I would say. Kind of naturally on one part, because it's, you know, kind of developed some semblance of concentration that's not really possible until you're overwhelmed with garbage that's all around us. But I have a sense that maybe I'm doing it wrong. Or something. Just, it's incredibly, it's just become completely arduous just to do anything. Like, every single thing I do is totally consumed with the thought of how can I be happy. And I'm just not going to do it. And I just, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. It's like, I want to go to sleep. It's like, I know I'm just going to wake up with the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is the exact same way. I want that. You know, grocery, but, you know, I get a cup of water or something, I put it in front of me and say, I think that this is going to give me something.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't, and I know it won't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've like lost even any sort of joy because I just can't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what you're seeing in your mind is that the mind is constantly looking for happiness, and that you look at something and you think that it's going to give you happiness, and you know it's not going to. And you just go, what do I do?
I don't think I'm supposed to stop there. But I just don't know what else to do. I mean, like, I know what to do on one hand. Like, I know, you know, we think of Bodhicitta and all others, and I kind of like have an idea of what Dharma is, but like in that moment when I'm totally like just
like seeing there's no way to be happy.
In a way, not that there's no way ever to be happy, but like if I really look at my situation, there is no happiness here anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's almost to the point where it's like, yeah, there's no way, but, you know, there is some side of, yeah, there's some possibility to be happy, but man.
Yeah. Well, what I meant by there's no way to be happy is there's no way in samsara to be happy. There's that according to the techniques you've been using until now to be happy, there's nothing that's going to work. Yeah. So you're really getting in touch with what samsara means. We talk about samsara is unsatisfactory. You are in touch with it. This is it, you know? So then you use that and you say, I want to be liberated. And I want everybody else to be liberated too. And liberation is possible, and that's where I'm going. Yeah, you make that strong determination for liberation. You make that strong determination for bodhicitta, and then you make really strong prayers to the Buddha and the teacher to please inspire you, please help you along the path, please grant you all the realizations and the inspiration so that you can transform your mind and completely undo the samsaricness for yourself and then be able to help others undo it. Okay? So it's like when you feel in samsara that you're backed into the corner, yeah, then you have to jump over what's in front of you. Yeah? You have to jump over it. Yeah? It's not like I'm backed in the corner and there's nowhere to go and I'm just unhappy and miserable and frustrated and depressed. But it's like, I'm getting out of here. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. You need to jump. Yeah. And it's like this, you know, what I'm experiencing is what, why they say samsara is unsatisfactory. And then the important thing, it's so important, is there's an alternative to samsara. That's the key. There's an alternative, number one. Number two, there's people who are going to help you. Because you have all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas rooting for you. So don't feel alone in the whole process. And then three is you have the potential to help everybody else who's also stuck in this. Okay? So you feel that, what you're feeling, and you then you use it to really understand the Dharma and to make strong, virtuous determinations, which actually bring a lot of clarity and joy to your mind. Yeah, because it's like you feel miserable, like you're feeling, because you're seeing that whatever way I turn, there's no happiness, but you're still turning to those same old ways. So what you need to do now is you turn to in a way that you've never turned before, and you turn towards liberation. Yeah, and you take really strong refuge in the three jewels as your guides. Okay? And that totally transforms the whole thing. And it gives you a very clear direction in life. Mm-hmm. It's tough, but you'll do it. That's it. There's no other choice. Yeah? And so you do it. You do it. It's like I've been knocking my head on the wall since beginningless time. I'm going to stop knocking my head on the wall. There is an alternative to knocking my head on the wall. Yeah? Knocking my head on the wall doesn't work. I'm doing something different. Yeah. So you have to see what it is that you can do that's different. And that aspiration for liberation for yourself and for others, that's the thing that's different. Yeah. So you're really seeking Dharma joy. And you're really developing a very virtuous, positive motivation. And then you make strong prayers and you take strong refuge. Got it? Yeah. So that's why you have to turn it towards where you need to go. Everybody else? Yeah.
It's been a bit of a busy week for me. Mm-hmm. My mind. I don't want to talk about all of it, but today, that mind that says I want to go home came up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I really took a firm hold, and I think wasn't understanding why. In the morning session, I had thought about how I told you I spent my whole life just chasing, running away from my dissatisfaction and moving from place to place to do so. And then that energy came up again I don't know if this is a wrong view or not, but the thing that got me out was there just was this voice in my head that said this feeling of dissatisfaction over this particular thing will arise and will cease. And at some point it's going to arise again and it's going to cease again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And it went away.
Yep.
Instantly.
Yep.
And then I meditated on it in the session that came later. I meditated on the Four Noble Truths. And I could feel that reoccurring dissatisfaction while I'm in samsara, chasing after satisfaction and never really getting it. Or I could live a life that's headed towards liberation, feeling dissatisfaction again and again, and have that actually have some meaning and a point to it. And that's where I've left it so far, and I don't know if it'll go any deeper than that, but it's been really freeing to get to that place, because now I feel comfortable being dissatisfied, if that makes any sense at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you feel comfortable being dissatisfied because you know that it's not a permanent state of mind.
Yeah.
That it arises and it goes away. How many people have here have wanted to leave at one point or another since you've been here? Diane?
Not yet.
Not yet. Just wait. You know, everybody's wanted to leave, huh? Yeah, Christina raised both hands. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this is quite natural. We are constantly dissatisfied in samsara. And I think that awareness that the dissatisfaction is not a permanent state of mind is a very important one. That nothing what we're feeling is a permanent state of mind. Whenever we're feeling something, it feels like that's all we're ever going to feel and that there's no other mental state possible. But what the thing is when you start practicing, is you get some space and you realize that what you're feeling is not a permanent state. It comes and it goes. It's impermanent. And so you don't need to latch onto it and be reactive to it. You can sit there and you can watch it. Anyway, you're going to go home and then you're going to be dissatisfied at home. Which is why you came here.
Which is why I came here.
Yeah. So. It can be sometimes very interesting to imagine going home. You know, you pick up, you know, you go home, you bring your suitcases home, you know, mom says, oh, I'm so glad you're back, and cooks your favorite deal, your brother and sister are so happy, everybody hugs you, and then what happens? Right. Go to work, drive the freeway, everybody's telling you what to do, you know. You're into all your old bad habits again.
I did that, but I could never do it well because my attachment blocked me. Really seemed like I could say, oh, and then they'll start yelling and I'll get annoyed, but there'll be this, and, you know, that'll make up for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't, until I realized that the dissatisfaction would cease and arise and cease and arise,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't really fully look at what it means to go home. There are all these roadblocks to the satisfaction.
Yeah, because the mind paints all these beautiful scenes, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go home and it's going to be like it never was before. It's like, what were you saying last week that you were imagining? Oh, when you start feeling like, oh, you want the relationship back, but then you go and you think about what it was really like?
Like, really think about it, like picture a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the good things are there, mm-hmm. but the other things are really present too.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done that meditation over and over and over until the romanticizing has gone down. Mm-hmm. Because it's big at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that was really wonderful.
What I'm doing is just looking like at my state of mind, and that's like when I hear what I want. Just, okay, yeah, you got it. You're actually going to have any because your mind can be any different than it ever was the rest of your entire life, even for a second. I don't know how it could be. In the same way, as long as I've ever known it, I don't know anything else, anything anywhere is ever going to change that. Anything else happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1,000 times a week. Your mind is just so
good. Yeah, your mind goes with you. Mm-hmm.
The place of the conditions may change.
Yeah.
The rest is just the same thing. What I'm happy about this year, I realize, is that every year before, it came up about can you become liberated? And I would go through this thing during the retreat about can you become enlightened and all that. And this year, what feels different is that the thought that hasn't come up, and I realized that from reading Geshe Sopa that I've been focusing a lot on faith, and that when he describes this, is that, you know, the story about looking at the gold and checking out the gold.
Mm-hmm.
The question he's asking there is something that's more at my level, which is through what I'm doing going to, is this aspect of the Dharma or this activity or whatever, is it going to lead more towards happiness or more towards suffering? And that's kind of like the test for the gold, mm-hmm. rather than is it, am I going to get enlightened? Because to me, that's just so, all the steps that go that far are like in my future,
mm-hmm.
but they're not where I'm functioning. And so that was, I think, actually very helpful for me because it took the whole question and put it into more of my world,
mm-hmm.
something I can work with, that I can see,
mm-hmm.
answer, I can answer that
question.
Mm-hmm. So I don't have that big, is this possible thing coming up.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So just seeing that, is this going to lead to more happiness than suffering?
Yeah, because I used to always, when I kind of evaluated my own experience in relationship to the Dharma, and even not exactly knowing always what the Dharma was, I would always look at what were the results.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of how I evaluated it. You know, mm-hmm. was this leading to something that was wholesome or unwholesome? And then, that's how I judged it, so that's more something I'm used to than, you know, doing Adhama. It's really out of the very portion. Adhama became an arhani, out of arhani, but it's just so out of my realm of experience that it's like, it's almost like, you know, pretty far away from my level of function. That's been helpful for me,
because
then I know that the steps are right.
Yeah. I think it's good to have two things in mind. You know, our final goal is enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
and then to get there, we need to take these steps.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let me share an intro to Tantra talks about specifically the curve, but it's something that always reminds me of something that I found important, which is to look at people further along the path than I am and have faith that, you know, they're doing it in this life. And then perhaps if I work hard enough, I can too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, I've been really inspired by the group here.
Mm-hmm.
That's been happening a lot this week. Like just seeing people's effort has been really, I don't know if I just didn't see it before very much or wasn't looking or was kind of in my own little world or something, but seeing the consistent effort of everyone here, going to the hall, no matter how you feel, to work hard when you're in there, mm-hmm. and then to come out and do service and go back in, and just realizing how incredibly rare that is to be with a group of people who would do that. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm talking about it, I remember about halfway through Vajra Sattva, that was became very prominent to me too, was the little group, it's like climbing the mountain together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I've been feeling very touched by that, and my job felt extra. I've been very inspired by that. To try a couple of things myself, like add in another 35 Buddhas and go on precepts longer, because I know I've been watching him really spend many, many hours in hall. So it's very inspiring. The whole group, though, just everybody doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We can do this.
Yes. Yes, and we're all helping each other.
Yeah, just by showing up.
Mm-hmm. Just by showing up.
And then there's so many things during the day where people do help, but in addition to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good enough.
Yeah. So you're wondering, how can you maintain mindfulness and a sense of, that's this one of samprajana, you know, introspective alertness or clear comprehension. How can you maintain that and at the same time not feel like you have to block out the rest of the world to do it?
Because it almost feels like the way I do it, it feels inside me. It has like almost an unfriendly feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as connected as I want to be, but if I kind of go out, then I'm like...
You just get drawn into everything.
I get drawn into things.
Right.
And this has been actually very helpful for me to not be drawn into things, so I can just have the clarity of my mind and get myself out of some of my habits, which is
mine. And that, you see, that's the purpose of being in retreat, is that we all understand that we don't have to be so interactive with each other like we usually are, and that it's not a thing of being unfriendly, and it's not like, I can't relate to you because I gotta block everything out. Not like that. But it's like we're all respecting each other and giving each other space so that we can all go inside. So don't feel like, you know, oh, I'm isolating myself from everybody else because otherwise, you know, I get so distracted. But rather, I'm respecting everybody's wish to be more internal and I'm respecting my own wish to be more internal. And just by the fact of our sharing this environment, we're communicating still on all sorts of levels, aren't we? You know, because even when you're being more mindful of what's going on inside of you, and you're not smiling at everybody and joking and, you know, everything like that, still you're automatically aware of, you know, the energy and the people around you, aren't you? And that's a feeling of being connected to those people, whether you're speaking to them or not. So it's not a thing of, you know, I have to block out everybody's energy, you know. But, you know, you're just not engaging with all the frivolous things so much, so you can stay more present and be more centered and, like you were saying, work on some of your bad habits, which you can't work on when you're too busy saying hi and greeting and chatting everybody. Okay. But no, but you're not isolating yourself, because everybody knows what you're doing, and we're all doing it, and we're all extending kindness to each other as we're doing that together. Yeah. And do you see how you're still in the environment, and you're still interrelating even if you're not talking a whole lot?
Well, I've, in the past experiences during retreat, always felt like basically the quality of the interactions without the speech was better.
Yeah.
I got to know people better, and it was in a nicer way.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just because of what I've been working on, it seems to help that I. In the teachings on this, when you talk in the factors that bring the arising of the serving attitudes, and you talk about contact, the question you ask there is, how can I be more aware when I'm in contact with this? And I feel like I'm not really able to do that. I'm more like, how can I avoid contact?
Yeah, well, sometimes to learn how to become more aware when we're in contact, we have to temporarily avoid so much contact so that we can be more aware of what in the world's going on inside of our own mind. But avoiding contact doesn't mean you're going like this, you know? Okay. Yeah, if you have that feeling in your mind like, everybody get away from me, I don't want to relate to you because you're distracting me. That's not a very relaxed, happy, meditative mind. Yeah. So it's got to be more of, you know, not that you're blocking other people out, but that you're paying more attention to what's happening here.
Yeah, I think I'm just so visually oriented that I find that I just look down a lot, because if I'm so visually oriented, it pulls me in. That's why I
Right. And that's why they say, I mean, on many... You know, if you go to a Vipassana retreat, people never make eye contact. They tell you not to make eye contact. Because just the eye contact pulls you out of your meditation. Yeah? But we have the kind of ground rules set up here where we know that if we don't make eye contact, it's not because we're mad, it's not because we hate each other, it's not because we're being unfriendly, it's because we're trying to focus inwardly. So you don't have to feel like you're blocking everybody out. You're doing what you need to do. But still, I mean, you sit in a room with people, you know what's going on, don't you? Yeah? So you're still in touch with everybody. Pardon?
I'm not tuned out.
Yeah, you're not tuned out at all. What do other people think about what she's saying?
I missed the ground rules. Definitely, we talked about this, but I was definitely externalizing a lot of stuff. And after our conversation yesterday, I started pulling inward, and it felt awkward because I had been relating to the community in such an external way that it was strange to suddenly pull inward. But I had an emotional day, and I was concerned people would think I was angry again. And, but it felt really good to go from meditation to just really staying with that mental state, but that mind frame that I've been in from meditation.
Yeah, because what you do in your break times is it really influences what happens in your meditation session. If you're focused in your meditation session and then you come out and you're looking at everybody and smiling and laughing and joking, you're going to go back in. How are you going to meditate? You have to start all over again with everything. So I'm not saying that everybody needs to walk around like this, you know. But you just be peaceful and restrained inside. I remember when I was in Taiwan for the Bhikshuni ordination, we had to line up outside and then go in, and they were always saying, keep your eyes down, because there were so many people all around us, you know, because all these crowds come to see, they're rejoicing, and so you want to look, and you know, who all is there, and what are they doing, what do these people look like, and it's a different culture, and what are they holding, and on and on, and it's like, no, you keep your eyes down, and you maintain focus on what you're doing, you know, that's what your job is. Because you are going in and out and in and out. But as you look ahead, if there's times when you don't have to be out so much because not so much is happening, then just stay in the hall more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I was doing was that also when I came out, and the only way that I kind of tried to figure to work with it was to just watch the reactions and interactions that I had with people and what arose with me. So sometimes with some people I get more out. And to just look at that and then kind of work with that a little bit. Because sometimes I go too out and then it doesn't feel very comfortable and I feel like I've lost kind of the retreat mind.
Mm-hmm.
So just from my own side, to keep working with my own reaction to what, you know, whatever it is, a person or a situation or, you know, whatever, just keep, you know, I was thinking in my mind, just keep coming back to base.
Mm-hmm.
That means to me to be not so out, not so reactive. So it's just,
mm-hmm. It's more about
what I'm doing, not so much if I'm in, you know, in the hall or out
of the
hall.
Other people?
I can't
feel
my
name.
I'm learning a lot about my mind in the past 2 weeks, and I'm continuing to work on the mindfulness and wanting very much to utilize my mind's time in virtuous activity and how difficult it is for me. I find myself ruminating about the strangest things. I mean, they're so nonsensical. They have no relevance to my life at this point. And it's just a continual stimulating kind of activity that keeps my juices going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and when I'm not doing that, I turn off into space, not even, I don't know where I am, I'm just gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've been just pulling myself back to the present as much as I can. And, I had a really lovely experience, but I have to say, when I went to Spokane the other day, drove down Spring Valley as far as Lake of the Woods, and I started out loud singing the 21 praises to Tara. Oh my prostrate, I was in the car by myself. Now I would have never, that is not something that comes out of Seth K's mind. It's usually what I have to do, what I have to get, what time is it, where's my lunch. The fact that I even thought about Tara, and she stayed with me the entire day. I haven't even been thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been making this sort of intention that I want to start using this mind, that the useless activity that's generating nothing. And at best it's neutral. At the worst it's just attachment, aversion, resentment, you know, ruminating. Is that I want to start working on getting these beautiful, you know, the verses that we've been talking about, starting to use these very mundane, while I'm doing all this offering services, to start using going to Gotami House and cleaning the windows and polishing the prayer wheels and just using that and making them into virtuous activity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been hard. It's not something that comes, it's not coming easy. And I find myself getting through 3/4 of the day without realizing that I've not done that. But there's this whole point about wasting my mind's life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the part that continues on. And that's the part that carries all of what I'm doing now. The body can fall apart and go away, but it's this mind that's got to have some good stuff in it. What it pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been using the time has not been well spent. And I'm not even conscious of how little I've spent in the dark in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Except when I'm teaching.
So this is relating to what we're talking about, is that when you're not, when you maintain your own presence and are more mindful, then you can remember those things and your mind is less distracted in la la land or in useless rumination.
And it's the habituated patterns of how this comes up without even effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's,
I mean, you've been teaching about this for years, though. Well, I would just say, I have a little bit of that in my mind, but it's almost 99% of the situation. So I think it's like what everybody's experiences that are being shared is that the awareness that we all as a community seem to be developing in how our minds work and what we need to work on. Things become very evident. More articulated, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation, that we all are seeing our minds more clearly and what we need to work on. And we're all struggling with it in one way or another, you know, but we're all finding our way.
Simone would ask if there's a specific technique for cultivating mindfulness of feeling.
There's a specific technique for cultivating mindfulness of feeling. Keep bringing yourself back to awareness of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings.
Similar to what Lusati was saying, that offering service sometimes it's so easy to get focused on completing my tasks. So it's a constant reminder to, it's kind of like that two aspects of the vision. I still have to hold the image of wanting something for a good purpose without losing just in the mundane of getting it done. That kind of sense of being present with a little piece along the way and then still being able to check it off. So that balance, and sometimes it's like, you know, yeah, I got it checked off, but I wasn't really terribly present with the journey. You know, and so it is like just kind of those little things that I've, one of the things I've done, I do keep a to-do list, and I've actually just in the last, ever since I've been out, on the top, to set my intention, and how I phrased it, and try to be mindful of the steps, along the way. Process. Sometimes they're more than others. One of the things I've been doing is putting the monastic readings together. So in the process of
I guess I've been able to be a bit more mindful with that, because it's the Dharma specifically. So in the midst of pretty whole bunch of you doing that, you know, the opportunity to not just sit and read, but it's kind of like there's a bit more of a presence in doing some of those things. And it's, it's kind of watching that in other times. You know, just,
Yeah, sometimes there's really the intention of, oh, I'm preparing these monastic reading booklets that are really important, and I'm doing it with attention and kindness. And then other times the mind just goes, well, let's get it done now, more of these pages, how many more to do?
You're right. Yeah, I caught myself. I mean, I was doing it, and I just felt for one set of it, the way the pages were never ended, hole punching, you know, three pages on the outside.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was putting it in and going, and it's also it's been fine mostly, but it's still is different, you know, not being in the hall as much. So it's kind of that acclimating, almost like not just in terms of talking, but in terms of just different kind of, you know, focus. So kind of trying to get a little bit of ease with that for myself, and just, you know, recognizing that it is different, it is a transition, and not a longing and wanting to be in the hall. It's just kind of like a different energy, you know, about what I'm doing with my body.
Just in light of that, I was trying to think of how my experience fits with everybody else, but one of the things I've really, really been benefiting from is this the exercise from whoever I said a couple of weeks ago of what's the basis of designation, what's the physiologic basis of designation, and looking at the time and rising over and over and over. But looking at it in terms of my, like, the label I have on the feeling that's in my mind, or the label I have on the behavior that's bugging me, or, you know, just like laying it on everything. And I'm finding it so helpful. So the thing about awareness is just what pops in my mind. I grabbed the Kleenex this morning off the back of the bathroom, and for the first time I just looked and thought, this Kleenex did not just appear out of nowhere. Somebody gave us this box of Kleenex. So there's there's something that is surprising me about the emphasis that I wanted to put on studying emptiness and dependent arising, and how it's so practical in all the other things that I'm doing, and all the emotional stuff that comes up. And it's like so useful. So whatever trip I had about it being too heady, or I don't know, it's just so useful. I'm finding it really, really helpful, and it's helping awareness a lot.